Krishnasya.
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 One time.
Vishvak.
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 Puru.
Puru.
Raji.
Raji.
Mandalaya.
Mandalaya.
Abhyanana.
Abhyanana.
Phula.
Phula.
Drisho.
Drisho.
Vrajarbhakha.
Vrajarbhakha.
Saho Pavishta.
Saho Pavishta.
Vipine.
Vipine.
Virejush.
Virejush.
Chara.
Chara.
Yatam Puruha.
Yatam Puruha.
Tarnikaya.
Tarnikaya.
Krishnasya Vishvav Pururaja Mandaler.
Krishnasya Vishvav Pururaja Mandaler.
Abhyanana Phula Drishavrajar Bhaka.
Abhyanana Phula Drishavrajar Bhaka.
Saho Bhavishta Vipine Virejus.
Saho Bhavishta Vipine Virejus.
Charayatam Bhoruha Karnikaya.
Charayatam Bhoruha Karnikaya.
Krishnasya Vishvak.
Surrounding Krishna.
Pururaji.
Pururaji.
Mandalaihi.
Mandalaihi.
By different encirclements. Of associates. Abhyanana.
Abhyanana.
Everyone looking toward the center.
Everyone looking toward the center.
Where Krishna was sitting.
Krishna was
sitting. Phula drisha.
Phula drisha.
Their faces looking very bright.
Their faces looking very bright.
Because of transcendental pleasure.
Vraja
arbhakaha.
Vraja.
All the cowherd boys of Rajabhumi.
All the cowherd boys of Rajabhumi.
Saha.
Saha.
Upavishtaha.
Upavishtaha.
Sitting with Krishna.
Vipine,
in the forest.
Vireju,
so nicely
and beautifully made.
Chada,
petals and leaves.
Yada,
just as.
Amporuha,
of a lotus flower.
Karnikaya,
of the world.
Translation. I think we should take our lunch here, since we are already hungry, because the time is very late. Here the calves may drink water and go slowly here and there and eat the grass. Accepting Lord Krishna's proposal, the cowherd boys allowed the calves to drink water from the river, and then tied them to trees where there was green, tender grass. Then the boys opened their baskets of food and began eating with Krishna in great transcendental pleasure. Like the whirl of a lotus flower surrounded by its petals and leaves, Krishna sat in the center, encircled by lines of his friends, who all looked very beautiful. Every one of them was trying to look forward towards Krishna, thinking that Krishna might look toward him. In this way, they all enjoyed their lunch in the forest. Purport. To a pure devotee, Krishna is always visible. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Santa Sadaiva Hridayeshu Vilokayanti. And as indicated by Krishna himself in Bhagavad Gita, Sarvatav Pani Param Tat Sarvato Shikshiro Mukham. If by accumulating pious activities, krita punya punja, one is raised to the platform of pure devotional service. Krishna is always visible in the core of one's heart. One who has attained such perfection is all beautiful in transcendental bliss. The present Krishna consciousness movement is an attempt to keep Krishna in the center. For if this is done, all activities will automatically become beautiful and blissful. So this is an essential key in Krishna consciousness, then, is this keeping of Krishna as the center. It's always important that when we hear these things, that then we are trying to apply them in our life. Many times we hear, and it's simple. And because it's simple, then naturally then it's taken as basic. And anything basic then naturally is taken as, you know, not as important as something complex. Once we were in Jamsetpur, and I had been invited to, I think, a lunch at the biggest industrials there. You probably, you know, heard of Tata, like that, you know. So, was it Tata? No, it was the other guy. No, it wasn't Birla. It was Tata Nagar, but it was the guy that does the bodies on all the buses. Tata makes the truck and he makes all the bodies, like that. So then, he had this collection in his house of Aurobindo's works. And he was praising Aurobindo, is that you can read his book. What a great philosopher, he was saying, is that his philosophy is so elevated and so esoteric that when you read it, you cannot understand anything. He actually told me that. He said, I've read through these books many times. I still don't understand. What a great, you know, intelligent, what a sadhu, he was just going on and on. So that seemed to be, you know, it seems to be a popular thing in general, but, you know, especially in the, you know, early and mid, you know, how you say, 1900s, then this was, you know, popular. It's very funny, you can talk about a few years ago as, you know, the last century, you know, back in the last century. So, but we see that in our line, then is the opposite, is taking something that is very difficult to understand and making it so simple that anyone can understand it. This is Saragrahi. This is our acharyas. They are able to take the complexities of the Vaishnava literature and make them accessible. That point is made by Sukadev Goswami, that even though these topics are very confidential, very subtle, still, if the disciple is submissive, has the right attitude, then he is able to understand these things. The spiritual master can explain them. So this is the principle that is there. So we have to be very, very careful that from the platform of Jnana, that we don't take it that because it's simple, therefore it's just very basic. Basic meaning not so important. Complex is important. Or from the platform of karma is that, okay, it's there, it's a basic, but let's move on to those things that get us the good result. Like that. So we always have to be very, very careful that we don't become distracted by this karma and jnana. Because bhakti is actually the most esoteric, but at the same time the most simple. So for those who are pure, it is simple. So then here, then, Prabhupada is pointing out is that this is the most important. To the pure devotee, then always remembering Krishna, keeping Krishna in the center, then is the perfection. So we see here is this is the natural way they sit in the pastime. Right? Means this is the regular way they sit. Just at this point, we get a glimpse of it. Technically, this is called Yogapit. Means the place where the Lord sits with his intimate associates, and then that form in which they sit around him, that is the Yogapit. So according to their position, according to their seniority or their intimacy, then they have their seats in the Yogapit. So then here we're able to see the Yogapit of the cowherd boys. Like that. Then we hear about the yoga peak here, where Lord Chaitanya sits and his associates sit around. Then we also have in Vrindavan at Radha Govinda Mandir, that's the yoga peak where Radha and Krishna sit, Radha Govinda sit, and then all their associates sit around. So depending upon that yoga peak, then we find the placement of the devotees. So this is the way they sit. They always keep Krishna in the center. That's just the principle. Everything is around. That's always the way it works. Whatever is of value is in the center. So here we see Krishna is in the center. So then this is, we see is in the pastime. It's practically applied. This is the principle. Is that the philosophy is of Sambandha is that Krishna, he is the center of all relationships. Whatever relationship is there, Krishna is the center of it. You may have to follow it back a long ways to get to it, but Krishna is there. So the pure devotees bring Krishna farther and farther forward so that it is more directly perceptible, or is directly perceptible, that Krishna is the center of all relationships. So then we see here, practically this is applied in the lives of the pure devotees. So we may think, okay, that's the philosophy, that's nice, that's some technique, or that's some vaidhi, that's some rule. But here we see is, where did the rule come from? The rule just comes from what the pure unalloyed devotees do. That's all. You want to go to the spiritual realm? The spiritual realm is full of pure devotees. So if we want to become a pure devotee, then we have to do what they do. So what do? So then that's given to us by the Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And as it's written in the Shastra, then that's how we can understand it. And so that writing it down, that is the directions, that's the rules, that's the instructions. So the essential points are given here. So here, they could sit in so many ways, but the main point is being brought out is how they're sitting, keeping Krishna as the center. And they're all facing Krishna. They may have Krishna in the center, but they're also facing Krishna. Just like Prabhupada said, they're one path. Yeyatamam prapadyante tamstataiva ajamyaham. There's one path only. But some are, it means people are at different places on the path. But some are facing Krishna, some are facing away. So you can be very pious and be very close to Krishna, but facing away. So that person is bahirmukh. His face is away from Krishna. Someone can be very far from Krishna, but facing Krishna. So then that's antarmu. So that is favorable. They will advance quickly. While the person that's facing away from Krishna, for some time he will remain in that position, but slowly, slowly, because he's facing away, he will gradually fall. So what's important is Krishna's in the center and we're facing him. In other words, it is favorable. So devotional service is performed and it's favorable. If it's favorable, then it's very nice. So here, the devotee is able to always think of Krishna. Krishna is always visible. And he is always able to be seen by the Lord. So that is the idea. So we can see that both by the philosophy and by the practical, you know, how you say, performance of the rituals, right? We don't put our back to the deity. We face the deity. Why is that? Because here we see they don't put their back to the deity. Right? It means Krishna is the deity. They can see him directly. We can't because of our conditioned nature. So the Lord comes to us in a form that we in a conditioned state can perceive. Then what are we supposed to do? We're supposed to do like they do in the spiritual realm. Face the deity. Keep the deity in the center. So that is the process. Right? And as that extends, so that's the Pancharatrik, the most direct of the form of rules. Then we have Vedic, less direct, but still, we keep the rules of the Lord in the center. That the reason we do anything in our life is because of the directions given in the Shastra. So because of that, then we perform our activities. That is our inspiration. But as devotees, we know that those rules have come from Krishna. Dharman tu sakshat bhagavat pranitam. That dharma comes from the Lord. It doesn't come from someone else. So knowing that these rules are given by the Lord, then those being kept in the center, then we are worshipping our deity. So then in this way, from whatever distance one is, one can connect it all to Krishna. Like this. Then it becomes direct. Indirect if it's just Vedic. Vedic connect to Pancharatrik, and Pancharatrik is connected to Bhagavat, then it becomes direct. It's just like when you have an electrical current. It goes in one end, comes out the other. So then you can say that we'll say it's a direct line. But we're understanding that electricity is coming through a wire. But it coming through the wire is still considered direct because you get the full benefit. So therefore, coming through the parampara, or coming through this system of Bhagavat to Pancharatrik to Vedic, then we get the full benefit. By chanting the holy name, we're getting that direct benefit. By worshipping the deity in pursuance of chanting the holy name, we get the direct benefit. By following the rules and regulations and culture of the Vedic society to please the Lord in our chanting, then that also gives direct benefit. So this is the process. So then Prabhupada says this present Krishna conscious movement is an attempt to keep Krishna in the center. For this is done, all activities will automatically become beautiful and blissful. So we find activities aren't beautiful, aren't blissful, it's because there's a good chance we're not making Krishna the center. Something else is getting in the way of that Krishna being in the center. Something is being done and there's some other purpose behind. Then we will find that difficulty. So if we make Krishna in the center, then it becomes practical. So that means everything we do, why are we doing anything? Okay, we're going to take prasad. Why are we taking prasad? Just because I'm hungry? Okay, that may be the impetus. But that can't be the reason. It has to be a service. We have a conditioned nature. That conditioned nature has hunger. So whatever our condition, nature, we're engaging in the Lord's service. So the Lord has said, you engage your propensity to eat in the Lord's service by accepting prasadam offered to the deity. Therefore we take prasad. Right? It may be our original point is that we're interested in eating, but it can't remain like that. Because then Krishna's not in the center. We're in the center. Our eating's in the center. And we've connected Krishna to that. So that's nice. That's the beginning. Right? This is called, as it mentioned here, accumulating pious activities. Krita punya punja. It means it's bhakti sukriti. It's a sukriti. It's a pious activity that I am doing whatever I'm going to do, but I am following the rules connecting it. So when those accumulate enough, then it says, one is raised to the platform of pure devotional service. So we have to make a distinction here, that it is bhakti sukriti. So we're getting the benefit, but it actually becomes pure devotional service when we reverse it. When the reason we're doing it is because Krishna, and from that we're getting the side benefit of taking care of our hunger. Right? All it is, Prabhupada says, all it is a matter of changing the consciousness. It's not a matter of changing what you're doing. It's just changing the consciousness. So we always have to be aware of this. Otherwise, the tendency is from time immemorial, we have the habit of doing what we want to do. Right? Even if we say, no, I do so many things because I'm supposed to do. But why do you do what you're supposed to do? Right? Because you want the result of doing those nice activities. Right? I'm very dutiful in my family, or I'm very responsible in the business, or some kind of thing. So it is a restriction. But I like the prestige of being respected as the head of the company, or a senior member in the company, or a responsible member of the company, or someone in the family that can be dependent upon, or so those restrictions, we are taking our results. Right? We are taking our due. So if we want to be very serious, we have to look at this point. Means, if it's too bewildering for us, it's too disturbing for us, we just want everything simple and nice, but at least know it's there. That at some point in time, we have to seriously look at what is our motives. And then just continue. But if we can look, then we have to see. Otherwise, we're just going to go on doing what habit we've done since time immemorial. And that's doing everything for ourselves. That is the natural way we're going to do everything. Right? We were in anxiety, so to relieve our anxiety, we have come to Krishna consciousness. After coming to Krishna consciousness, we found out there's God, he's a nice guy, and you know, you can have a relationship with him, and it looks a lot better than whatever you can get here. That's a secondary point. Right? It's a secondary point. Then, with time, that starts to become the primary. The reason I'm here is not because the material world is bad, but because Krishna is nice. Krishna consciousness is nice. Devotional service is nice. That's why we're here. So, like this, so this process has to continue, has to keep going. That therefore, now my point that it's nice and keep going is because it pleases Krishna. I'm going to be, if Krishna is pleased, I'll automatically be pleased, right? We've heard a million times, you water the root and the whole tree becomes satisfied. But these are things that must be the core of our existence, why we do things. Not that, okay, heard that, been there, done that, okay, now on to the next one. No, because each one is built on the last. Means unless Krishna is the center, then there is no goal that's connected to Krishna. Therefore, the activity can't be being done to please Krishna. All it is a mentality. That's all. What we're doing doesn't even change. All it is changing the mentality. That's the thing. So if we're aware of that, then we're very, very careful to see to that quality. Otherwise, by habit, we're just going to fall into just being whatever weak social position we came from before becoming devotees. You look at it. You look at the lifestyle, look hard at the lifestyle you live, the values you have. Is it any different from where you came from? Or has it been changed by Krishna consciousness? Now you have to look down to everything. Why is everything there? Why is your furniture the way it is? What pots do you use in your kitchen? What kind of stove do you have? What spices do you use? You know, what clothes do you wear? How do you sit comfortably? How do you deal with friends? Do they come to your house? Do you go to their house? You know, what do you do when they come? What do you eat? What's on your walls? What's on your floor? What is your wall painted like? Or is it painted at all? You look at it. What is your diet? You know? And you'll look, and it may not be much different than before you joined. Okay, we made it vegetarian. Okay, we wear these funny bed sheets. Okay, a few things like that. But other than that, is it any different? I'm saying this just because I remember going to America, going to the devotees' houses. Except for the pictures of Krishna on the wall, I didn't see any difference. Absolutely no difference. If I had gone into one of my karmi friends' houses or into their house, I didn't see any difference. Like that. Maybe they saw a difference, you know, but we all have to remember, New Age started in the 30s. 1930s is when the New Age started. So maybe devotees are just catching up now with the social scene, but it started back then. So a few little this, a few little that, a few little esoteric. When I grew up, that's what everybody had in their house. So we have to look. And what is the lifestyle? You came from middle class? Good chance it's middle class. Came from lower middle class, good chance it's that. Came from upper class, good chance it's that. So we have to look at that. That doesn't matter. That's not the question. The problem is not why you're living. But the question is, are you also carrying the mentality of that middle class Western mentality? And so that is being superimposed on everything that we do. So that is actually the center of all our activities. And we've happened to connect Krishna around that. That's what is to be looked at. The lifestyle doesn't matter. What is the conditioned nature? Who cares? Anything engaged in Krishna's service is perfect. That's the definition of perfection. It's connected to Krishna. So it doesn't matter. Right? We had, what was that name? Sahadev? He had nothing and he's feeding banana peels to Krishna because all he has in his house is some bananas. And he's so ecstatic. He doesn't even have, I think, a mat to sit on. Krishna's happy. And he went to, I think, Bojadev or something. He was the king. Very opulent. And then enjoyed all royal opulences in that devotee's service. So Krishna's showing it didn't matter. What is the lifestyle? But the point is in both of them, Krishna was fully the center. That's the point. So that is the question, because I see, personally, that so much of the time our own conditioned desires get in the way of the forwarding of Krishna consciousness. The mission cannot move forward because we hold it back by our own conditioning. Prabhupada said nothing from the outside can stop it. So if anyone's afraid of anything outside, there's no need. The demons could not stop any movement of the Lord. But Prabhupada said from within, that's the only way you can make a mess of it. Right? There's been no one. We've had so many things. We've had governments go against us. We've had court cases. We've had municipalities. We've had individuals. We've had scams. We had everything. I mean, Prabhupada, it just went by. And afterwards, more glorious. But now, we're afraid. Oh, outside they might say this, might say that. But I mean, there's so many people out there. Everybody's got something to say about everybody. So anyone who tries to please everybody doesn't please anybody. Right? And for those people who are somebody in the material world, they all know this point. You know what you're doing, you just do it. And don't worry if others don't like it. You just do it, and you're successful. Right? You think no one has something to say about Microsoft? Right? No one has something to say about the President of America? Right? You know? Or you can go on the list. But they're successful, and they're running the world. Say what you like, but they're the ones in the seat. And they're just doing what they know they got to do. Right? So as devotees, we know what we're supposed to do. We just do it. Who cares? Okay, you can present it pleasantly. Right? Say it nicely. That's just being, you know, proper etiquette. But it doesn't change. We can't change our principles. We can't change putting Krishna in the center. And then claim that we're going to get to the pure devotional service. Right? So that's the point. We have to be very, very careful. Then we're successful. We see that, but as pointed out, it must be favorable. It can't be how we think we'll put Krishna in the center. Lord, I mean, Ravana also, you know, basically put the Lord and the devotees in the center of his life. All he ever did was think about Sita and Ram. How to enjoy Sita and how to get rid of Ram. So then, this was his meditation. But it wasn't favorable. And so then, you know, then at the appropriate time, and today is a, in remembrance of that, then the Lord killed Ravana.
Right? He was then the battle, then this is the day that he killed. But he was also remembering, just as Kamsa was remembering, Hiranyakashipu was remembering, they were all remembering, but unfavorably. And so therefore, they're known as demons. But here it's said that pious activities means it's favorable. Because here is bhakti, sukriti. Pious doesn't mean mundane pious. It means what is bhakti, what is favorable for devotional service. It may look like a mundane pious activity because piety came from the spiritual world, not from here. You know, the material world isn't known as the most pious place, right? Like that. You know, how do you say? Probably, if you want to know the essence of what material existence and culture in its natural form is, then you probably have to accept creamy bhojan as, you know, probably the most representative of what is going on here. Right? We all know creamy bhojan. Creamy means worms. Bhojan means eating. So there's a hell called creamy bhojan. It's a lake that's 100,000 miles across. And it's just full of worms. And there's nothing else in there. So all that they do is eat each other. You know, so someone's more expert to not be eaten too quickly, he gets a little bit bigger. And then one day someone bigger comes along and eats him. So that's, you know. I mean, we try to make it more noble by, you know, saying dog eat dog, right? You know, because dogs are supposed to have some good qualities. You know, they're loyal, they're, you know, this, that. But actuality, it's worm eats worm. You know, it's like that. That's the actual position in the material world. So to avoid this, then we follow Krishna's direction. So then that following may look like piety to someone else, but because it's done to please Krishna, it is devotional service. So when that increases enough, then Krishna becomes the center of our activities. When it's done by regulation, then we gradually become purified to where it comes automatic. It's just natural. That's why Prabhupada would say it's automatic. Because if you just follow it, keeping that idea that Krishna has to become the center, of course we forget. But as soon as possible, we bring it back. That's our goal. That's our determination. Then automatically we will get there. That's the point. It goes. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Why Krishna sent me much problems
Well, Prabhupada mentions that if we can't understand the cause of something, then we just know that Krishna is the cause. Like that. If we can see that, okay, because I did this and that, or that's not incorrect, therefore then devotees are not pleased, difficulties are coming. If we can't understand, then we understand Krishna's there. So there's sometimes something bigger, because it is the law of karma is such that, let us say we did something wrong and never got corrected for it, then we are going to be blamed for something we didn't do wrong later. You know what I'm saying? Let's say someone steals something and is not punished for that, right? Then in the future time or even life, then he will be blamed for stealing though he didn't steal anything. Right? So then that is also an aspect, is that whatever happens, we are only getting actually what is due to us. It's very difficult to deal with because of the mentality of justice. We look at everything analytically and just, but we tend to look at it in very narrow as just, you know, what happened to me just immediately. We won't take it before I was a devotee. We won't take it back to previous lifetimes. So because of that, many times, and it's bewildering how things may happen to us that seemingly aren't just. But material energy is perfectly just, so you'll only get exactly what you deserve. She won't give you anything else, right? And she knows who's who. I mean, she's been dealing with you since time immemorial. I'm sure she's figured out who you are by now, right? You know, number, you know, 5,377,000,000, you know, to the 200 millionth power, you know, that convict. Okay, that one over there. They get it. You know, they've been here since. Oh yeah, that one came in the material world, you know, like that. She knows who everybody is. So she's not gonna make a mistake and give your reactions to someone else, or someone else's to you. Right? Yours to someone else is not a bad idea. Okay. But someone else's to you, now this is going too far. So that's one thing. Two is many times we look at it that it's just what we're doing. I did it perfectly. But doing it perfectly is not good enough. Duryodhana perfectly did everything in connection to Krishna. But Krishna wouldn't eat at his house. He would go to Vidura's house. And Vidura was poor. Right? Duryodhana will offer him all the royal opulences of the Kuru dynasty, and they were the emperors. Vidura is just part of the court. So in comparison, Krishna goes over there. He goes and eats at Vidura's house. So the mentality is important. So even though it may be perfectly done, then if the mentality is not right, then also it's a problem. Or in the inverse, maybe the mentality is nice, but it's not being done right. But if we're still getting problems, it means that we're not applying our mentality enough to actually get a good result. It means we're in the right mood, but if we were in more of a right mood, we might try to work it out and do a better job. Right? Because the result is for Krishna. If the result's for us, okay, we can do whatever we feel like. But if the result's for Krishna, then we have to try our best. So, means the sentiment is important. But if that sentiment is not pure, then it needs to be guided by the intelligence. And the intelligence then has to discriminate what is a better way of doing it. Right? Prabhupada said, naivety is a spiritual defect. Understand? Means that you don't know is not enough. He made this comment in London when he had the devotees there. It's a brand new yatra. They've just started. But they were having to deal with big levels in the society and government and things like that. They had to get permissions, they had to do all these things. So then, it's not enough that, oh, we don't know. Oh, we know, hey, Prabhupada, we're just a bunch of, you know, hippies and we don't know nothing, you know. It means we know how to, you know, strum on a, you know, guitar and, you know, put flowers in the end of rifles and, you know, we're pretty good at having sex, you know. I mean, that we're pretty good at. And, you know, I can cook some, you know, pretty good miso soup, but I never talked to a government official. You know? It's not enough. Prabhupada said, it's not enough. Right? It's that because you have to do it, you have to figure it out. So that's the point. Is that sentiment is good, but the sentiment must strive to get the best result for Krishna. And that's an attempt, that's what pleases Krishna. Whether it's good or not, that's another thing. But we look at it, we're trying to do the best. Does that make sense? But if something's going wrong, then you have to analyze what are the complaints. Maybe you try your best. You have to remember that in Japan, arranging a vase is a 20-year course. 20 years. Then they consider your master. So maybe someone figures you should have put, you know, the smaller one in front and the big one in back or something. You know, who knows what was the complaint. You know, so like that. Or you have colors, you know, which color was next to each other. If it was put on the opposite side, you get more contrast. Check out, find out. There's always more to learn. So like that, as you take it, is how to go deeper, how to go farther. Right? Means the level we're at may be good, but spiritual is always increasing. Why is it we can hear about Krishna now and then hear the same thing later and it's just as nice? Because it's increased. We chant the holy name, but it's always increasing. So therefore it's always fresh. So just because we're doing something nice, that's good, but it should increase. It should get nicer. So we're doing our best, but then there's always better than that. So something is there that Krishna is trying to say. So we should try to find out what is it. Does that make any sense? Yeah, but you talk. You can talk to, you know, Pankajungri, find out, see what he says. He's a great sage, can see past, present, and future, so maybe he can tell you what's the actual esoterics behind this dilemma. Yes, we won't reveal any more than that, otherwise we wouldn't want to embarrass him in the assembly of Vaishnavas. Something more? Anything else? Any other questions? Yes.
Sometimes we have a problem that we are in some situation, we have some anartha, and in some situations anartha comes up. And then we cannot give it up, the anartha itself. Or we give it up, but whenever we go to that situation, it always comes back.
Mm-hmm.
So what we should do in this case?
When an anartha comes up in a particular situation? Well, two things we can do. One is if it's possible, then try to avoid that situation until such time as we're stronger. Prabhupada mentions that is like in devotional life, is that the devotee or the brahmacharis, they may go to the forest and then in the forest perform their sadhana and that and study until they're strong enough to actually be able to come out and preach in society. Because in the beginning, then it's harder to control the senses if the senses are near the sense objects. But once that is developed, then even in the presence of the sense objects are not disturbed. So then that is one thing. So that's one method. The other is to actually analyze what's there, if you can. If you can analyze without getting caught up. Because sometimes the point is analyzation means the intelligence has to be
taking the lead. If the mind takes the lead, then better leave it until you're more purified. Right? Because if you can analyze it and pick it apart and just figure out that, hey, there's nothing here. Right? The reason I'm doing this is because of that. Okay, you know, I'm thinking, yeah, I sit first in the line. Everyone's saying, wow, he's such a great Prasadam Bhakta, you know, like that. He's always there first. He's always this and that. You know, but then he could analyze, well, the reason I'm actually sitting here first in line is because I don't have any faith that the guys who are serving the shot are going to give it to him if I sit later at the end. Plus, if I'm in the beginning, I'm near the pots, I can get more. I can see, you know, this. You know, you may have a whole list of his own personal motives. It has nothing to do with, you know, actual devotion to Krishna. Of course, because it is Krishna, one gets benefit. That's Sukriti. But the point is one can analyze. And then see what is the real aspect behind it. So if we can do that without trying, but in doing that one cannot, justify. There's also another word for that. Rationalize, yeah, that's the main thing. You can't rationalize. We just have to see, we have to look at it. Because intelligence just makes the distinction. And then we compare it to the standards set by the acharyas. Then we can see. Otherwise, we can rationalize anything into perfection, right? You know, the mind is so perfect in this way. It's been doing that since time immemorial. I need to do this, right? I need to rob the bank and steal all this money. I need to blow up the presidential palace. I need to, you know, do this and that, right? I mean, there's a dire need. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it, right? Unless need is there, there's no activity. Unless prayojana is there, there is no action. There is no abhideya. So they found that need. They've rationalized it. So then it's going on. So one has to be able to do that without rationalizing. You know, if there is a direct connection to the scriptures, that's the direction the acharyas give. Then it's more clear. If we're not clear, talk to devotees, talk to others, discuss with them, get their perspective. What's going on? It means that realm, yes. We have to remember that that's Gokul. Goloka, these things don't happen. Gokul, this happens. See, this is a very important point, that many times what is thought is spiritual only means Goloka, and we don't take Gokula very seriously. But all what the pastimes that's going on right now that's described in the Bhagavatam, that's Gokul. Right? The acharyas reveal some of the Golok pastimes. But what we hear about is all Gokul. Because to those from the spiritual realm, there's no difference. To them, there's no difference between the two. It's the same place. Just sometimes certain activities happen and certain don't. But otherwise, it's the same place. So this causes a lot of misunderstanding amongst the devotees. Because then here it's like this point is, will that happen in the spiritual realm? This is the spiritual realm. But the point is since we're not pure, bhava means you're not materially, you don't have a material conditioned nature, therefore you have your spiritual form, but you haven't developed pure spiritual love. That's the meaning of tatastha, right? Tatastha means it's not spiritual, it's not material. Right? I mean, that's, what is that? Inherently, love is there. Right? It's natural that one connects oneself to one's source. If one's not connected, then one perishes. Right? Does that make sense? It means the wire is connected to the generator. It has electricity. It's disconnected. It doesn't have. Right? So the connection must be there. So we haven't fully made that connection. But it's inherent that it's there. Does that make sense? So where are you going to find that place where you have the spiritual world, the full-blown spiritual realm, at the same time is the non-perfection of consciousness can also be manifest? It's not Golok. It's not the material world. Right? It's Gokul. So that's the realm where all these things can be happening at one time. Right? Material is without the spiritual. Golok is without any of the material. Right? Does that make sense? That's so there, until one reaches prema, then one has to be in Gokul. So that's what Prabhupada says. After here, then we take birth in Gokul. Then in Gokul, we perfect ourselves so that we come to the point of prema. Then we go to Goloka. So basically, that's how it works. So this is showing how the subtleties are there. They apply in our life as well, but it specifically points out for those who are on that platform of bhava that they still have to be very aware of their need for perfection. Does that make sense? Like that. So these, any of the points can be applicable anywhere, but when the you know, so we can take, okay, we can't be proud. But there, that can't be proud is, you know, we're saying can't be proud, I'm puffed up, I'm the doer, I'm this, I'm that, because I'm not. But these gopis are the most fortunate. Right? So, technically you could be proud of that. But if you are, Krishna's not pleased. You understand? When Krishna expands, he can have an attitude. You know? Like that. Calls Poundrucker a frog. You know, he can have an attitude. I'm God. Right? Balaram goes up to Rama Harshana Sutta. He didn't stand up when he walked in. And it's kind of like, hey, I'm God, not you. He walks over and kills him. You know, because it's just a reality. You know, the guy in the Vyasan is supposed to represent God. God's walked in, then we should have some standing up here. Standing up is an order. It should be going on. It's not going on. So therefore, you're not representing the Supreme Lord. Therefore, you're bogus. Therefore, you know, I'm God, and now we're going to see, right? I'm not going to come and do something. I'm just going to pick up a blade of grass, right? You're supposed to be humble like a blade of grass. You're not. So I'm going to kill you with this blade of grass. Right? He didn't hurl at him and, you know, cut him to pieces. He just came up and just touched him. So we can do, but we see in Braj with Krishna, then he doesn't have that, not with the gopis. Cowherd boy, they can do that. The gopis know. So like that. Anything else there? No?
They say that their mind manifests from more goodness and that serving benefits from more passion. But they also say that instead of the open mind, they don't understand that.
How the intelligence is higher than the mind, though the intelligence comes from passion. Means it's a matter of subtlety. Just like subtler than the intelligence is the ego, but that comes out of ignorance. Right, so we can understand that if we are looking at consciousness. This is the subtlety of the material elements and which one actually controls what. Because of your ego, then you think in a certain way. Right? We may say, I'm free, I think how I want. No one's free. You think exactly how the modes of nature tell you to think. Bus. End of discussion. Right? You can predict what someone will say. Otherwise, how does Vyasadeva write what's happening in the future? Because that's just the way it works. Right? The kid drops the vase. Right? And the mother's not just watching the vase go down. When it hits the floor, then she's shocked. Wow, it broke. And then she thinks, oh, that cost me money. No, as soon as the kid drops it, she's already freaking out. She can see the future. Right? So how is that? Because she knows how the modes work. So those who have studied further know deeper how they work. So they can tell you, you're speaking like that because of this mode, because of this. And we can see it in your lifestyle here, your dress there, how you speak here, what you eat there. You can say the whole thing. You catch one of them, you can tell everything else. So that's the meaning of chewing the chewed. It's new to us, because we've only forgotten that we just did it last lifetime. But to those who know the modes of nature, it's just the same old thing. Nothing new, absolutely nothing new. You know? You know what I'm saying? It's just that. The modes of nature create it. That's why your hand is like it is. Someone can read it and say, oh, great mystic. No, all it is the modes your consciousness is under, then moves, the material energy through the planets then creates your body that has lines on it that you can read. That's all. It's nothing mystic. Right? You had a material mentality, so therefore, then the material nature arranged that you were born at this particular moment, so those planets would influence you to continue your mentality. Right? So like that, you can read all these things. You can read the mind, you can read the hand, you can read so many things you can read. How somebody walks. You can just see them walk and you can tell their mentality. It's so many things. How they talk, how they... You know, Prabhupada says, you can't identify a fool until he opens his mouth, right? As soon as he opens his mouth, then you can say, okay, this person's a fool. Before that, he can look very dignified and, you know, very nice, you know, well-dressed and like that. You know, you generally see as the, what do you call it? The puppet. You know, the ventriloquist is generally dressed better than the ventriloquist, right? You know, but doesn't have much to say. So the modes of nature then are the what's behind all, so it's your consciousness. So now if we really look at it from that angle, that's the important thing. Okay, now how does this work? Okay, now we have false ego, ignorance. Then we have intelligence, passion. Then we have the mind, goodness. Now let us continue going down. Then what's below the mind? The senses. What mode are they from? Passion. The senses are from passion. What are those connected to? Who runs the senses? I mean that they function. They're mechanical, technical running. It's the intelligence. Right? The intelligence discriminates that this wall is a different color than the floor. So that's, you know, turquoise, and that's white and kind of an off yellow. Understand? Then what's below the senses? Right? Where do the senses sit? In the body. What's the body made out of? Matter, the grossest of the material elements. That's connected with the false ego. Because if you say I, you identify with your body. Right? Since when is a subtle body, you know, American or Indian? You understand? Right? You know, is the subtle body 45 years old? Is the subtle body male or female? You know what I'm saying? This is the point. Is that it's the grossest. So therefore, even though it's there, it comes out through this. Even though the intelligence is higher, it comes out through the senses. And the mind controls the senses and the body. What the mind wants is what the body and senses do. So unless the intelligence gets control of the senses, you can't control the mind. And unless you get control of your ego, you're not going to control what you do with your body. Understand? So that means then in the mind, the center of that is where the consciousness lies. So if the consciousness is elevated, then the ego is elevated, the intelligence is elevated, and the mind is pious, or virtuous, or dignified. Understand? So that's the... So all those are classified as false ego. So the most subtle is the false ego, that I am the controller, I am the enjoyer. And because of those two things, all the other three egos are manifest. You remove that one, the other three disappear. That's the plug into the material world. You remove that I am the controller and enjoyer, then that I identify with a particular place and body and situation, that I identify with my senses, and I identify with my own desires, then go away. So from the consciousness, then the mind has certain desires. Then that manifests as certain senses, and that manifests therefore as the certain bodily identification. That's how it's described in people. So therefore, if you look at that way, that's the way in, and the way out is through consciousness. So when Prabhupada says, put Krishna in the center, you do that means I'm not the controller, I'm not the enjoyer. Krishna is the controller, he's the enjoyer. Ego's gone. That means material existence disappears. So we may say it's basic, fundamental, yeah, that's it. You do that one thing, you're out of here. You're not in the material world anymore. Because being in the material world is not that the soul happens to be situated here. Because the Lord comes here, as pure devotees come here, they're not in the material world. They're in the spiritual world. But that it looks like the material world, that's the influence of the Tathasta Shakti. The Tathasta Shakti makes it look like the Lord and his associates are in the material world. That's her expertise. But actually, they're in the spiritual world. That makes sense? So you can change that one thing, only that one thing. Then you go back to God. I am Krishna's servant. Krishna is the Supreme Lord. He is the center of all relationships. So therefore, then, in that relationship, we naturally have our love for Krishna, and we express that love through devotional activities. But that starts with accepting Krishna as the center of all activities, of all relationships. If that's done, everything is done. Now, to describe every aspect of our philosophy and culture, it all goes back to that alone. Then, it's an unlimited ocean. So depending upon where the devotee is situated, you take the philosophy and culture down to the point where they are. Right? And then from there, then they become, you bring them up. So that is the meaning of time, place, circumstance. That's the meaning of, practical preaching. Is that you know the whole connection, but you can identify where the person is. You know where the goal is, and you can connect the two. There's no change. Some will say, Bhaktivinoda Thakur changed things. Or they'll say, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur changed things. Or they'll say, Prabhupada changed things. None of them changed anything. All they are is saying the same philosophy and culture that the Goswamis were discussing and living underneath trees in Vrindavan to Malechas and Yamanas, on the other side of the planet. So what they can do, how they can connect, the same principles are still there. Does that make sense? So that's what's going on. Okay. So then we'll end here. Guntaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Prema ki. Thank you.